everybody. It is January 22nd, 2008, and we will be having, what is this, the second or third State Fair?
Third one, I think.
Who's counting when you're having fun? This morning we have with us Representative Dahl, Representative Coghill, Representative John, Representative Johansson, and Vice Chair Representative Bob Roses. And today we'll be hearing HB 305, which has to do with campaign fundraising during sessions. And we have HB 313, Journal Obligation Bonds for Crime Labs. And we're going to begin, all over the committee, with HB 305. And that is sponsored by Representative Meyer, Chenault, Fairclaw, Olson, Newman, and Rammer. So, Representative Meyer, would you care to come forward?
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to ask Mike Plosky, my staff.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. In 1998, the current law before us was changed to narrowly apply to prohibit fundraising during session only to legislators. And if the logic. Our opinion, if the logic was such that we don't want legislators raising money during session, then because it creates a conflict between what we do as legislators and fundraising, then also we shouldn't be raising money if we're also running for other offices, whether it be a local office or it be a federal office. So that's all this bill simply tries to do, is just extend the current law to also include now legislators who are in session. To prohibit them from raising money for federal or local office, and we had to change this in two areas. We had to change it in the ethics code. That's why the bill is kind of confusing. If you read it, it looks like we're repeating ourselves, but we're actually changing it in the ethics code and then also making a conforming change to the elections law known as the AFOC section. I think this is important, Mr. Chairman, to help us regain the trust of the public, that we are here to do the public's business. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, money and fundraising should be separate from the Capitol. It should be totally away from the Capitol and our business here. It seems to me like it's just common sense that. You know, you don't want somebody handing you a check while you're at the same time they're asking to get a bill heard or asking for your support on a bill. Again, this we did not put an effective date on this, so it wouldn't apply to anybody running for office.
That's what I wanted to ask.
This year.
So nobody currently in the legislature, this would affect no one currently in the legislature.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, because unless somebody makes an amendment to put an effective date. The way this would work is that it goes into the law would go into effect 90 days after the governor signs it. So even if we were able to pass this through both bodies by April 1st, it would still take. And then assuming the governor signed it right away, it would still take 90 days, and you'd be well into July, which is, you know, the primaries in August, and you can raise money 90 days before election. So no, this would not impact anyone who's currently running for a local or federal office, as well as, a local federal office. So, Mr. Chairman, that's all the bill. It's a simple bill. We're just trying to extend it. But as you know, Mr. Chairman, sometimes when you change one area, it impacts other areas. So it looks like we're making more changes than that. But that's certainly the intent.
You said it's only common sense. You know, I've observed in my many years that common sense isn't so common.
I agree, Mr. Chairman.
Fish. Identify yourself other than Fish.
For the record, my name is Mike Pulowski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. I was going to add one thing to the sponsor's presentation, and that was that there is another conforming change in the bill, and you'll see that on page 1, line 14, and then repeated throughout, and that's the inclusion of in a place where the legislature is convened, in addition to just the capital city. And that was a change recommended by ethics. So in the event that a special session might be held outside the capital city, it just applies uniformly.
Representative Roses.
We were having a brief discussion before the committee meeting started, and I'd like to get it on the record, but doesn't the current statute prohibit a candidate from campaigning at all during the legislative session? So it wouldn't be just the incumbent. It would be any challenger to an incumbent. So the statute currently prohibits that, but I believe that past practice has been that that's been allowed, and I think you've included in this packet information that came from the lawsuit that involved with ACLU, and so I think part of what I overheard you say to somebody else was that even though statute prohibits it, because of this lawsuit and it speaks to the constitutional rights of an individual, that the ruling has been that we've sort of overlooked what statute is in favor of this lawsuit. Is that correct?
But Mr. Chairman and Representative Roses, we're hoping APOC is online and can clarify that for us. But I think what you just said is correct, because the way we're reading the bill, a non-legislator who's running for office should not be able to raise money just like we during session or unless it's 90 days prior to the election. But I do think you're correct. I think we've been overlooking that for non-legislators. And I don't know, Mr. Pulaski, do you have a go ahead?
Representative Roses, through the chair, for the committee's I would recommend the legal memo that we were talking about that's included in your packet is the Legislative Legal Services memo dated April 23rd, 1999. And that's the memo that talks about, in particular, the Ethics Act. And the Ethics Act prohibition was acceptable because it did not apply to non-incumbents. We noticed in reading the existing statute that the APOC provision, which is separate from the Ethics Code, does apply to both. And we talked with Legal Services this morning, and I believe Brooke Miles is online. However, I would make one point of clarification for the record. Representative Roses had talked about campaigning, and APOC statute only applies to fundraising. So a non-incumbent could perform any number of campaign activities, but they could not raise money while the legislature is in session, unless it's within 90 days and outside of the capital city.
Thank you. If it pleases the chair, I would, if there's anything that Brooke Miles would like to add to that, if we've left anything out or if there's some clarification that she would need to make.
Why don't we ask, Brooke Miles, are you with us?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. This is Brooke Miles. I'm the Executive Director for the Public Officers Commission. And I can clarify this for you by letting you know that APOC does not enforce the provisions of AS 1513-072D, because in its decision, the Alaska Supreme Court, although they didn't strike this one from the statute, they nullified it in striking a provision that was currently in 074C, which called for non-incumbents and incumbents to have a legislative timeout. It was found that there was no compelling reason for the limitation, no state compelling reason, and thus it was left to the Legislative Ethics Committee, where it is appropriate for incumbents. But so I'd have to tell you, under advice of the Attorney General, it's likely that even if this bill is passed, the Commission will still not be enforcing that against non-incumbent candidates.
Well, if they're not enforcing it, should it be there?
It shouldn't be there. Actually, we've in past years, Mr. Chairman, APOC has suggested that because it's unenforceable, the provision of AS 1513-072D should be deleted from the statute. The last time the legislature was set to do that, a huge controversy arose in that there was interest in the members that if you couldn't apply it to incumbents, that that legislators should be able to campaign as much as they wanted to during session two, and there was a move to strike it from the legislative ethics provisions, which of course then caused great controversy and things just stalled.
I'd always heard that on the subject that while somebody running against me could in fact raise money and campaign, That's an advantage they have, but I have an advantage as an incumbent, and it kind of balanced out. That was always what I understood.
That's always been my understanding as well, Mr. Chairman. As you know, there's significant power in an incumbency.
I hope so.
And I have to say that one hasn't noticed in data a significant edge being gained by challengers in the time which legislators spend in session. That being said, I do think that probably the provisions of clarifying that whether the special session takes place in the Capitol or another location in the state, that's probably very positive. And I'm sure Joyce Anderson is online and ready to testify for the Ethics Committee, which could enforce this provision and, in fact, does currently enforce the provision with respect to legislators. And our understanding, APOC's understanding from the Supreme Court decision, is that that's where it's properly housed.
Okay. And while you're on the subject, Joyce Anderson, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Would you weigh in on the discussion here, please?
My name is Joyce Anderson. I'm the administrator for the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. And the Ethics Committee has discussed, well, first of all, has discussed both campaigning during a regular or special session, and they're very much in agreement and made a recommendation regarding the other change that's in the law. Ms. Miles is correct. The Ethics Committee does enforce 2460.031 in regard to legislators not campaigning during a session. And there has been some discussion in the past, I'm not sure so recently, regarding campaigning by legislators for any office. The committee has not officially come out and endorsed that, but there has been discussion that they feel that there shouldn't be any campaigning. They have definitely endorsed the section in here that talks about in a location where the regular or special session is being held. But I would say that based on my tenure with the committee and the discussions that we've had, that I would think that the committee would be in favor of not campaigning for any office. And as, again, I know Representative Roses has been on the committee, he may have some comment as well, but that has been the discussion in the past with the Ethics Committee.
Thank you. And I'd overlooked it, but I'd like to note that our friend Representative Grunberg has been excused for the committee meeting this morning. Representative Roses, you have the time.
Actually, I don't have anything to add. I think Joyce covered it fairly well, and I would agree that the majority of the committee members would like to see the covering all offices and not just the ones that are currently listed. So I would agree.
Okay. Any other questions for either Brooke Miles or Joyce Anderson? Anybody?
I just have a background question.
Yes.
I'm just curious if anyone knows what other states, how other states do this. Is it allowable in other states to run for a federal office and during session? Can you give me some kind of perspective on this?
Representative Dahl, this is Joyce Anderson. I do not have that information. I have not conducted that type of research, but I certainly could get back to you on that.
Well, of course, anybody can run for any office, I guess. It's just a matter of can you campaign and can you raise funds.
That's exactly right.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Coggio.
Just a thought. That really should be a request directed to the sponsor. I don't know that we necessarily want to make APOC or the Ethics Committee research for us, so just for what it's worth.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative Meyer.
We have done some research in this area, and I think I asked Mr. Pulaski here, and it just varies. It varies considerably from state to state on how they handle this. Again, my opinion is it just doesn't seem right to be raising money while we're here for any office, because the public doesn't necessarily know that you're running for mayor or if you're running again for your old seat.
Or national office.
Or national office. That's correct.
Representative Pulaski. Ooh, I promoted you. Mr. Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Dahl through the chair, I was just going to offer that we would put together some of that information and deliver it to your office.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the sponsors of the bill? If not, anybody in the audience wants to testify on this? Anybody else online? If not, I'll close public testimony and have a committee discussion. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I just think this is necessary. It's a good bill. The only problem that I really have in it, as you might imagine, is the mention, and I know it has to be in here, but it's another place in the statute where it talks about the capital someplace else in the state. And it's absolutely true for our region. I know it has to be in there, but it's just one more place in print where the capital would be somewhere else in the state. But I know we're going to talk about that, I think, next week. So I just wanted to put that out there.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Several people from the Southeast nodding their heads here. Are there any amendments?
There is, Mr. Chairman.
Would you move the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Amendment 1.
Okay. I'll object for purposes.
Amendment number 1, basically, it is the intent of Amendment number 1, and I have been going through it, and I think it does it, is to expand on this a little bit and say that a legislator can't use his office to raise funds for other people during session. We have bills come before us, and having a legislator's name on a fundraising document for any candidate of any kind, I feel is inappropriate use of legislative office. The other thing this does is expand.
Excuse me, are you talking about the offices we hold or the offices we occupy?
No, I'm talking. Yes.
Because right now we can't do political activity in my office down the hall
No, Mr. Chairman, what I'm talking about is a representative or senator should not be allowed to participate in a fundraising effort for another candidate for another office during session. Be that mayor, dog catcher, anything. Be attached to fundraising letters sent out to their contributor list. I mean, you can't stop people from trading contributor lists. But I think it's inappropriate for me, for example, to campaign for the mayor of my city to assist in a fundraising effort for him during session. Those fundraising letters will be going out to people who I will have legislation in front of me, and that, I think, exercises undue influence on contributors. And I think that's inappropriate for us as legislators to be campaigning on behalf of anyone or raising funds on behalf of anyone for any office in the state.
Let me ask you this. I have in my email a request from a constituent to endorse a certain presidential candidate, which I'm not going to do. But that would cover that type of thing?
I don't believe an endorsement would fall in the same category as fundraising. This is actually be participating in a fundraising event or another candidate.
Okay. Representative Dahl.
Yes, I just have a question, Representative Johnson. I'm just now looking at your amendment, so I'm not real clear on everything that you said in here.
I just got it this morning myself. We've been working on it for a while. We went through several gyrations.
It's a work in progress.
So I apologize to the committee for the tardiness of it.
I guess I'm trying to get some clarity here. I attend, if I'm able, a monthly meeting of the Democrat Party here in Juneau, and I understand that the purpose of that party, of course, is not only to discuss business, but they accept contributions during that time, and checks are made out and passed, but not to me, but to others who might be running for an office or considering to run and so forth. Now, with that, how would that pertain to attending political meetings?
It is not my intention, and if this amendment does that, it's not my intention to have that done. What I'm specifically looking at is specific fundraising events sponsored by legislators during the session for other candidates. You know, if you go to a raffle, or if you even, I guess in some cases, if you played bingo, I would not be interested in going down that far, because some of those proceeds end up going to candidates or raffles. But I would want to restrict during the session a legislator's name being on a fundraising piece for a candidate for any office in the state.
Representative Dahl?
for the discussion. Mm-hmm. As we know, in February here in the capital city, we have the Democratic Party puts on a large auction, beer, hot dog, so forth, up there in February, and it's attended by every legislator.
Not everyone.
Well, every D, you might say. At any rate, we know that the purpose of that auction and so forth is, I mean, the whole purpose of this is not only to welcome legislators, but obviously to gather money. How would that be affected by this?
I don't believe, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe it would, because it specifically says for a candidate. I don't think fundraising for a candidate is, and I don't think that is for a specific candidate. That's the intention of the amendment. Although I'm not sure, you know, that may be running afoul of the letter of law if you're raising money for campaigns during the session. You may, in fact, if not violating the letter of the law, the intent of the law, mm-hmm. by having that fundraiser. So, you know, that I don't know that. That's something that I haven't even thought about, didn't even know about. But that's not the intention of this. It's not designed to restrict party activities. But what it's designed to do is me as a representative endorsing or soliciting and exerting undue pressure to raise funds for a candidate for an office in the state of Alaska. It's basically designed to not allow a legislator to use his office to raise funds out of the name of his office or the power that the incumbent has to raise funds for another candidate of any kind. And actually, it's expanded to bond initiatives as well, so it's not just candidates. So to raise funds for any type of candidate or bond initiative during the session.
And if I may, would that include for a political party?
Political parties, I don't think it would. I really don't have a problem with that, because I don't think a legislator should be raising funds for anyone during session. I think that's one of those things that and the sponsor needs, you know, certainly if I run afoul of the intent of the bill, I certainly want to hear from the sponsor. But for my money, when we're in session, we should be concentrating on the business of the state and not advancing some political agenda.
Another thing, I periodically receive mail from the national office of my party, mm-hmm. wanting a contribution. Would this cover that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's putting your name on a fundraising event, and that's what this is designed to. I don't think it would limit your contributions. I think we'd be into a free speech issue there that I just do not care to tackle. I don't think it would keep you from contributing personally to a candidate of your choice. What it would do is keep you from putting on a fundraiser for a candidate of your choice and putting your name on it and saying, you know, people know, you know, the chairman of state affairs is putting on a fundraiser. Wow, I better go down and donate because I may have legislation in front of them. That's what I want to avoid. That appearance that any part of this building is for sale at any price.
Any other discussion on this?
Mr. Chair, this is Joyce Anderson. If I could provide some comment that might clarify a few questions.
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, what Representative Johnson is talking about and Representative Rose's again was on our Ethics Committee, so I always like to mention that. The Ethics Committee in December did issue an advisory opinion, Representative Johnson, that said that legislators, based on the current statute, are not allowed to host or put their name as a co-host on a campaign fundraising invitation during session for legislative candidates, because currently it just talks about legislative candidates. That doesn't mean that they couldn't endorse a candidate by saying, yes, I endorse this candidate, as long as their name is not put on a campaign invitation. They could certainly put their name on, let's say, a signature ad, maybe, that solicits votes. So that is something that currently the Ethics Committee and it has had questions about and issued an advisory opinion in December. So based on the current statute, which you're asking is in place only for legislative candidates, and if you wanted to, and because of the new language that's being proposed, it would also fall into place for federal candidates or municipal candidates, since that's going to be added into this particular statute. The only thing that isn't in here that you mentioned happens to be, let's say, a ballot initiative. And that has been, there have been questions in the past to the Ethics Committee regarding what type of work a legislator may do in relation to a ballot initiative, and what side is the campaigning side and what side is more the legislator side, which is more of a policy statement, or the, you're on either the, you know, for it or against it, and so you're talking about more policy issues versus the campaigning aspect. So I guess what I would say is, and I haven't had a chance to really look too closely at your amendment, but I think that what's in place right now would cover your concerns. This advisory opinion was sent out in a newsletter in December, and I realize a lot of legislators were in transition at that time between their home base and moving to Juneau, and do plan to stress that in another newsletter, but I just wanted to clarify that, so I'm available to answer any other questions regarding this.
How would that affect somebody who's a sponsor of an initiative?
The sponsor of an initiative right now, the restrictions for that are that a legislator is allowed on their own time, not with their use of their state resources, which would include the facilities and staff and so forth, to work on an initiative if they wanted to gather signatures, to do fundraising and so forth. So if that were added into this particular bill, then the fundraising aspect would be taken out of what they're allowed to do currently.
Governor Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that is exactly the intent, to expand this to all elections within the state, to treat the elections as if they were legislative elections and you can't solicit funds for another legislator, but also to extend it down to the city council, dog catcher, and to ballot initiatives while we're in session. I just feel it's inappropriate to exercise that, and for lack of a better term, pressure on contributors, that while we're in session potentially acting on legislation that could affect them, that we have legislative names on fundraisers for individuals, ballot initiatives. That is the purpose. That is exactly the purpose, to expand it into other elections that we have, is not just the legislative ones that we exist now.
Now, that's the sponsor. do you support or oppose the amendment, proposed amendment, or would you want to amend the amendment? What's the sponsor think about this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, we support the intent of this amendment because the whole intent of the bill is to prohibit any of us from leveraging our offices to raise money for our own elections or elections of others. We hadn't thought much about the initiative process, but certainly I can see again where somebody could use their office to help raise money for initiatives, and again, I don't think you should be able to do that. Have we thought about the? I guess one question I'd have for Representative Johnson is the 90-day problem. Do you see that? Does that bring up any concerns with what you're trying to do?
Through the chair, I do believe the 90 days is still in the amendment. That we haven't excluded that. That 90 days within the election, pretty much all bets are off. So.
Mr. Pulaski.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, looking at the amendment, and I think this is something that it's difficult to see immediately. If you look at Section 4, which is on page 2, I believe this is very specific, that you cannot, for another person, raise money when the legislature is in session, regardless of the 90 days. It is different than what Joyce was talking about from the Ethics Committee, because the provision in the existing statute would allow that type of conduct within 90 days of the election.
Right.
It's not in the Capitol.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I may have misunderstood your statement. I do not intend to affect a candidate's ability to campaign and raise money. I do intend to affect a candidate's ability to raise money for someone else. I don't think that would exclude joint fundraisers and things like that. But in terms of actually raising money for contributions, I think right now the law says that only a treasurer can accept money, and I think that's the way I like it. And I would not want to see people campaigning and using their incumbent office, be it a senator in their off term or anything else campaigning for. I just don't want people using their office for political purposes.
Any other discussion on this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, and there's, if I might, there is one thing that I kind of brushed over. I did provide for an effective date in this amendment, so I think we take care of it. I'd like for it to, and providing for an effective date, I would like for it to take effect immediately, so I don't want to wait the 90 days.
Well, wouldn't this take effect? If we accept the amendment, it becomes part of the basic bill.
That's correct.
And then it would take effect whenever the bill...
But the bill does not have an effective date, is my understanding.
What?
The bill does not have an effective date, which means it will take. So this amendment adds the effective date to make it take effect immediately. That's the other part of the amendment that I kind of, insignificant part that I brushed over that is really not
insignificant. Any comment, committee, on that? Any, Representative Coggio?
I'll defer to Representative Roses, and then I've got a question on the 90-day issue.
I don't have a problem with the effective date being immediately. Quite frankly, this is a legislature that loves retroactivity, but I don't think we can go back and make people give funds back or take their name off of a fundraiser, but we're good at it. And so I certainly don't have a problem with it being effective immediately.
Representative Coggio.
Mr. Chairman, I might have a problem with with really an effective date that becomes kind of retroactive because people have taken the law as it stands now and proceeded. Whether I would have done that or not, I think it would be unwise for us just to set an immediate effective date when there may be those either in municipal or federal that have already set these things in motion. So
they acted in reliance of what is.
So I guess I would probably I would question that. So. But maybe to Mr. Johnson on his amendment on page 3, because I'm having to flip back and forth, so a legislator may not, from page 2, do 1, that is, pledge and make contributions, and then A, for the legislator's own campaign on page 3, unless all of this stuff happens in a regular special session, if the location is other than the capital city, during the 90 days immediately preceding the election. So I'm trying to read and understand how that works. The previous discussion was they weren't too sure if it fit, if there was the 90-day exception, right? And so help me understand here, unless, as I'm reading it on the fly here, so I'm trying to catch up with you guys. It seemed to me like that the 90-day immediately preceding the election still applies. So help me understand that.
Mr. Chairman, Mike, and Mike and I work on this. My understanding is this doesn't change the existing statute that says we can raise funds within 90 days of the election as long as it's not in the city where the session is being held. So I don't think this changes that. I think that's existing law, and that's
okay,
the
I misunderstood in the previous discussion where I thought you were saying that it, in fact, did. So, okay.
No, it is not our intention to. I'll peruse this, but it is not our intention to affect that at all.
So I must have been reading when the key statement was made. I'm sorry.
Or maybe the key statement was made incorrectly. It was very likely.
Mr. Belowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Coghill through the chair. The point that I was trying to bring up, and I might have done it poorly, is on page 3, yes, for a legislator's own campaign in which they are a candidate, the 90-day rule applies. However, B and C, which are fundraising for a ballot initiative or for another candidate, that 90-day rule would not apply.
Okay.
And that is that it, it's a subtle distinction, but it is an important
point. But that's a real policy call.
Given that the existing ethics code would allow it, within 90 days for another candidate, according to, I believe, what Ms. Anderson was saying earlier.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment?
No.
If not, I'll withdraw my objection. Any other objection?
I'll take an objection. Yes, I object. I ask for a call.
Yes, okay. Without objection. If we have no objections, we just pass it.
I do have an
objection. Oh, you do have an objection. Okay. Would you speak to the objection?
I believe that it's broad, and I'm not sure I'm clear on every aspect of it and exactly what is included and not included in it, and therefore I without further study I would not I would not pass this amendment.
Okay. Would you like to call the roll, please?
Representative Roses?
Yes.
Representative Coghill?
I'm going to... Too bad you have the effective date on there, so the answer is no.
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg, not present. Representative Dahl?
No.
Chair Lim?
Yes.
Four yea, two nay.
Okay. Amendment number one to HB 305 passes. Any further discussion on... yes, Representative Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, Brooke Miles brought up earlier the conformity of statutory language with the court case, and the question is to the sponsor. Have you considered looking at conforming language?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, actually, we haven't discussed that, but I think that's a good point that we should do that.
And Mr. Chairman, I was probably, while they were discussing other parts of the bill, I was trying to figure out how to do that, and I'm not too sure exactly how to get to that. So, but it would be, I think, wise for us either to challenge the court or agree with the court. And I'm always open to challenging the court, but in this particular case, I think I agree with them. So I'm just trying to figure out how that would work. And the only place I could think of would be on page 1, line 5, where it says a candidate or an individual, and you might conform that to a legislator or legislative employee who has filed with a commission. That might be the amendment that sets that in motion. But I don't know. From what I've seen through the rest of the bill, it seems to be where we're heading. Rather than just a candidate, it would be a legislator, which is a sitting legislator, or a legislative employee who also has some authority within a legislative office. So,
some legislative cloud.
Yeah, I'm open to that as a suggested.
Where's this? It would go after our committee.
Here.
I think this is the only committee, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This is it.
Mr. Chairman, what we will do is we will get with legal services and see if there is some conforming language that we can add to clear that up a little bit.
And that could be done in the Rules Committee?
It could be done in the Rules Committee, if so choose. If those who want to challenge the ACLU court decision, which I always would like to challenge the ACLU. Might go to judiciary, but I don't know that it's necessary.
No, I don't. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill itself?
I just had to bring that comment up. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
No, I
couldn't help the commentary.
The only problem is you said it and I didn't. Representative Dahl.
Yes, Representative Roses also wish to speak. Thank you. I'm a little bit concerned about how quickly this is moving through only one committee, and I would like to ask whether I know that I heard a comment just now that you don't think it's necessary for it to go to judiciary, but I think it's a significant bill and done in a politically charged climate, I think, at the same time that we're in. And I would like to see it go to judiciary, at least have a discussion now of whether it should or should not go to judiciary.
Representative Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, in the my 10th session, every time we talk about political campaigns, it's politically charged. And so we've made almost every decision under that pressure. So I don't know that that's a good reason to just get another committee referral.
No, we are in a 90-day session.
Here. Right. So,
and campaign season is upon us.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to propose two amendments, and we'll just see in drafting how they go, and then when we get to scheduling it for the floor. My first amendment would be on that page 1, line 5,
page
to strike
one, line five.
After D, parens, strike a candidate or an individual, and insert a legislator or legislative employee.
Okay. That would be line 5. A candidate or an individual changed to a legislator or a legislative employee.
Yes.
Any objection? Without objection, Amendment 2. That's Amendment 2 passes. Did you get that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have another one?
Mr. Chairman, yes, this is this goes back to my last vote. I'm going to try it again. On page 3, or actually page 3 of the amendment, which would, I don't know how it would conform, but I would like to strike the effective date, basically, which would be section 5 of the
Is there any objection?
Object.
Okay, will you speak to your objection, please, if you wish.
I think this is a bill that cleans up some of the areas where we talk about in our ethics training about some things that are legal aren't right. I think this is one of those things that may be legal but isn't right. And anytime we delay enacting ethical behavior or ethical legislation, we've done a disservice to the public. If 90 days makes or breaks a candidate or a campaign or an initiative or anything that this has to do with, if we're erring on the side of being ethical and transparent and to clear and as honest as we can possibly be in reinstilling the confidence of the public that they have in this body, 90 days is an eternity. It needs to happen now. We should never wait to enact a piece of ethics legislation. It should be immediate. The minute we stumble upon something, and we do it on a regular basis, where we come across something that, boy, it's legal, but is it right? We should fix it. We should fix it immediately. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Fix it. Fix it now and be done with it and put it behind us.
Any other comment on the amendment? Is that number 3, I think? Amendment number 3. Yeah. Representative Rogers?
The only comment I would have would be, even with an effective date, it still has to go through a discussion of the House. It's got to pass the House, and then it's going to be, same thing's going to have to happen with the other body, and then the governor's going to have to sign it. It's a long ways off. So if this effective date stays in there, it's going to give anybody that would be affected by this piece of legislation will have plenty of notice to make sure that they don't run afoul of it by the time it becomes effective. So if there's anybody out there campaigning now or anybody out there fundraising now or sponsoring fundraisers for other people, this certainly would give them plenty of time to make sure their name is removed from future activities or future fundraising mailers or so on. So I think the effective date is not going to hamper anybody. And I agree with what Representative Johnson said. If we find something we need to fix it immediately, not and postpone the not postpone the effect of what we're trying to do.
My concern is that people or entities may have acted in reliance of the law as it is today, and then this upsets the apple cart. Any other?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to speak to that. I think Representative Roses is absolutely right. If we look at this, we're in a 90-day session. If this is, hopefully for the sponsor's sake, this is not a typical piece of legislation, but it could end up being a last minute. We're 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks from this seeing the governor's desk, 30 days from our signing it. We're 65 days from anyone having to, and that's just pulling numbers out of the air, of course. That's before anyone is affected by this legislation. 2 months for them to adjust to this legislation, to see it coming, and I don't think that's an unreasonable amount of time. And what we're really talking about is 180 days from now before this legislation takes effect. That's a half a year.
Governor Cogger, would you like to sum up?
I'm convinced by the argument both by Representative Roses and Johnson, so I'll withdraw the amendment.
The amendment has been. That number 3, was it? Amendment?
Yes.
Amendment 3 has been withdrawn. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill at all? Any closing comments by the sponsor?
No.
If not, are there any objection to passing the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we pass House Bill 305 as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note.
Without objection, HB 305 has passed this committee and probably well on the way to becoming law. Thank you very much. Excellent presentation. Excellent topic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the State Affairs Committee. And we will look at some conforming language. And if it's more complicated than we anticipate, we will ask for a Rules Committee. Thank you.
It will take a short eddy as we sign the paperwork. To session, we now be hearing HB 313, General Obligations for a Crime Lab. And that is a bill by the request of our governor. So who will be presenting this bill?
For the record,
for coming, and please identify yourself and hear about your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is John Glass, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. You have in front of you a bill for the Alaska Public Safety Crime Lab. I'd like to give you a little bit of history concerning this bill and the reason for it. In 1986, the current crime lab was built in Anchorage. It houses about 18,000 square feet. It was built for six chemists and four support personnel. Today, we have in that same building working 41 people in that building. In 2006, I believe, the legislature appropriated $4.9 million for a study of to create a new crime lab. We have taken that money and have hired an architectural firm in Anchorage. DOT is on board, and if you will look to my immediate right, we examined 34 parcels of land in the municipality of Anchorage to develop a crime lab. We have come down to one parcel of land, which is about 15.3 acres of land on Tudor Road, which is about 2.5 blocks to the west of our current laboratory. And the public safety is between the APD and our office in Anchorage. The Livingston Sloan, who is our architect in Anchorage, contracted with a firm and developed a plan for the crime lab and developed the size that we needed for the crime lab. Looking forward to the future, which we did not do when the lab was built in 1986, they currently feel that we need approximately between 80,000 and 84,000 square feet to do the lab work that we currently do. This crime laboratory services all of the municipality and state agencies within the state of Alaska for the crime, all the DNA, all the fingerprint, latent print examinations, crime scene investigation, ballistics are all done within this laboratory. We have look forward to this. The governor has proposed this bill for $100 million. I have also, I believe, online for us our members of Livingston Sloan, Matt Tanaka, who is the engineer for DOT, who is working with us, the lab supervisor, Oren Dim, and I also have present with me from Department of Revenue, Jerry Burnett, for any financial questions that any of the members of the committee might have.
What's going to happen to the current lab? What will become the old lab? Will that be disposed of?
Mr. Chairman, hopefully the current lab will be referred over and refurbished and made into existing office spaces for the rest of public safety. We are woefully crowded in the headquarters building in Anchorage currently, and we need to move some people into that.
So that would be other public safety people are not necessarily associated with the crime lab.
That's correct, sir. It'll be actually my plans are probably to put the sexual offender registration, alcohol beverage control board, and a couple other entities within that building.
Okay. Representative Rosas?
That was the same question I was going to ask, and one of the concerns that I had is we're constantly trying to expand, you know, the lab sciences and the laboratory opportunities for the University of Alaska campus, and so it certainly would seem a kind of a shame to take what's already an existing lab and convert it, spend a lot of money convert it to office space when we could certainly utilize it for
expansion of the program at university system. So there would be a way to incorporate more office space in this building for probably the same amount of money it cost you to refurbish that one, wouldn't it?
Representative Rogers, through the chair, I don't know whether it would be the same amount of money or not. Laboratories are extremely expensive to build because of the different types of HVAC equipment that goes into those and stuff, so I can't speak to that specifically.
Thank you, and if I may follow up, that's exactly why I hate to see one that's already been built be turned into office space because of the expense of creating another one. So anyway, thank you.
Reverend Nicargo.
How long has the present crime lab been a complete lab?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, that lab was built in 1986, and we started there at that time with the lab doing the processing at that time. 1994 was when the first DNA started being processed in that laboratory.
Okay, that's true.
Reverend Coghill?
Is that the only crime lab that you have as public safety?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, yes, it is, sir. That's the only crime lab we have in the state.
Follow up.
Question. Are you tight on storage, or is it on the actual lab itself? Because I think one of the concerns I've heard is storage of DNA samples, storage of other paraphernalia that you end up testing. So is it lab space or storage space that is your primary problem?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, the answer to that question is both, sir.
Okay.
We're extremely cramped. I think the term compressed is the best term that we can use. When you have 41 people into a lab that was built for 16, it's extremely small. Part of the problem is some of our technicians, when they bring their stuff in to work, they're working in a space about the size of this table. And, of course, one thing that's really critical is no contamination, no cross-contamination from the lab. When they're working on their studies here, and then they have to move over here and use their computer that's sitting next to them to do that work, there is always the fear and danger of cross-contamination, which always creates high risk when it comes time for court presentations. And then we just flat don't have any room to put anything. I apologize to you. I had 43 pictures emailed to me yesterday to show you some of the compressed states that we're in as far as storage space, but it came on my BlackBerry, and I haven't been able to figure out how to get it to make those prints. I can get those to you later, sir.
Yeah, if you could have that ready for the next committee at least.
I will have.
Do you have a follow-up?
Go ahead.
Reverend Rogers?
Do you currently send some of your lab work outside that with this new lab would then be done in-state?
Representative Roses, through the chair, we do, in fact, outsource to the state of Washington for our toxicology stuff, and it is our hope by the time that this laboratory is built that we will be doing that in-house.
Do you have a sense, if I may follow up, do you have a sense of what percentage of your lab work that is currently being sent out?
I don't have a percentage, Representative Rose, through the chair, but possibly my lab supervisor, Orrin Dim, might be able to answer that specific question for you.
Do you have a current cost on what is costing you to send this out to another lab, or is it an exchange program? I mean, how's that working?
I believe currently the contract, Representative Rose, through the chair, is about $180,000 a year. We're paying the state of Washington for the toxicology report, and then we pay all their travel and expenses while they're coming up to testify in court.
It was $180,000, is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Governor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I missed it. How large is the building design that we have now that's up on there? How large is that square foot?
Representative Johnson.
The new building, right.
Representative Johnson, through the chair. The new building is approximately 83,000 square feet. What we're hoping, and the reason why it is so large, is that we're hoping that 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, we're not going to be in the same situation that we're in currently where we're compressed again. We do not know, and I don't think anybody knows, what new science is going to come along between now and the next 20 years. In 1986, when we built this lab, we weren't aware of what DNA was. We just was in the infancy stage.
We don't know 5 years down the road whether something else such as DNA will come along. And this gives us that room for expansion and more stuff that we're going to be doing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my point. If, I mean, maybe 90,000 is the number as opposed to 80, I understand, because I don't want to be in a situation where if things are growing as fast, if they grow as fast in the next 10 years as they have the last 10, I don't want to be back here saying we need another one that's 160,000 square feet because we've grown so much that we fall in the same pitfalls that we fell into with the previous crime labs. I just want to encourage, build in some growth opportunity there. So that was the point.
Well, yes, because, you know, the population of the state is going to grow. As the population of the state grows, unfortunately, crime is going to grow, you know, along with it. Plus, there'll be probably new technological advances made probably more rapidly than it had in the past because the further along, every year technology changes more rapidly than it did the year before.
And a follow-up, if I might.
May I respond to that
please.
Question, Representative Johnson, through chair? This lab, as we said, it was 83,000 square feet. The beauty part of this is also there is room for expansion there if we should happen to need it. If we were to build a lab today for the number of people that we currently have in the lab, we would need approximately 50,000 square feet. So we have allowed for that overages, and we also have allowed that there will be space and room for additional add-ons if we need it down the road.
And
or that science that has
so there's enough done. Real estate there on the parcel, the land parcel, that you can expand out if necessary.
That's correct. And Mr. Chairman, and the wings that are added have added space so where we can add on to those wings very easily. Unlike the current lab that we have, that's one of the problems with the current lab. We don't have the space, number one, and the building was never designed to have an addition to it. We've had it looked at, and it's just not conducive.
Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On a different subject, is the $100 million just for the construction of the building, or does that include any new equipment that's going to be needed for this facility?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, that includes the entire lab, including the new equipment, including the move-in costs from moving the old lab into the new lab.
So we're bonding for a move?
The new lab will be built, and then in that process, we'll also be able to move the present equipment and stuff in that price, yes.
Representative Dahl.
Yes, a little bit more background information here. Are there local labs in the various municipalities? Is this the only one that we have for the state? There's nothing else.
Representative Dahl, through the chair, it is the only lab in the state that does criminal work, yes.
And I just asked that question because I believe you have, what, one medical examiner, is that right, for the entire state?
Representative Dahl, through the chair. Yes, that is correct. There is one medical examiner, though it's not within public safety. That's in Health and Social Services, I believe.
I see. And just finally, have you asked for this before?
Representative Dahl, through the lab. No, I don't believe we have asked for a lab before. I think this is part of the process going back to 2006 when the initial appropriation for the study and the design stuff was made, I think, is the only request.
That seems like it's about time, doesn't it? Thank you.
I'm afraid it's past time.
Good evening, Cargo.
Mr. Chairman, since we don't since we're not going to delve into the finances of it, which I think it's appropriate that we don't, the people of Alaska actually have to approve this, so I think we have another big hurdle to go over. So in answer to Representative Johnson's question, the needs are great in all of the areas, and so I think if we just expanded this one area, we'd overload other areas too. So I think you have to grow into it. So the medical examiner is one example of those kind of bottlenecks in our system right now. So, Chairman, I'm convinced I'm ready to pass this thing out.
I'm ready to pass out, too.
I'm just ready to pass out.
You're ready to pass out.
No, I refuse to answer on the grounds it might tend to intimidate me here. I think all of us strongly support law enforcement. And if you arrest somebody, it doesn't do any good unless we can also convict that person. And part of the process of convicting is to have evidence that's both fair for the public and fair for the defendant. And Representative Johnson, and then we're going to...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this is the broken record part of me.
I know what you're going to say.
I'm opposed to bonding for this project. I support the project 100%. I just don't want to use a credit card when we could pay for it with cash. This, to me, is a way to make the capital budget look better. Take $100 million off the table of the capital budget. As a matter of fact, there's another bonding package before us that may take it to $200 or $250 million that's out of the capital budget. I think that should be in the capital budget. It should be debated and discussed as a capital item. It is a capital item. We have the money now. If this is worth having, it's worth paying for. I'm very reluctant to indebt our future when we have the kind of cash we have now. If we're not going to save that money, we shouldn't go in debt for it. I'm just opposed to the bonding aspect of this. I think we could write the check, not pay the expenses. I understand that there is investment and offsets and all that, but no one has come to me and said, we're going to invest this $100 million in this fund to offset this bond so that it's only costing us X instead of Y. I haven't seen that. Everyone said that. The transportation commissioner in a previous committee said that. But no one has come to me and said, we're bonding. We're going to offset it by depositing X number of dollars in this account and offset that. Now, I understand we've got a huge account that's making money and everything gets rolled into the permanent fund or the constitutional budget reserve and we save it there and that's generating revenue. That doesn't cut it for me. Unless we specifically offset this $100 million somewhere that we can pay those bonds off at a reduced rate, then I'm not comfortable with bonding and indebting our future for a project that we could pay for today. And with that, I will be done.
Yeah, Mr. Barnett, you have some comments? Would you identify yourself?
For the record, my name is Jerry Barnett. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Alaska Department of Revenue. And if I could, I'd like to respond to something that Representative Johnson said about putting money in a separate account to pay for this. In the governor's spending plan, the budget is proposed this year. There's savings that total, if you add them up, right, billions of dollars. And there's the transportation endowment, which is $1 billion. There's close to $1 billion in additional deposits direct to the retirement funds when you total everything. It is under IRS code, if you specifically put $100 million into an account that earned more than the interest on the bonds, then we would have to pay that difference to the IRS, and we couldn't do it that way. By putting the money in other savings accounts, we're able to borrow this money. The last GO debt that went in the state of Alaska in 2003, the money was borrowed at 3.84%. Today, if you were borrowing this money, it's somewhere in the 4.5% range. The savings accounts that are being proposed to have money added to them are for a different purpose than offsetting this directly, but they do have that effect. And those savings accounts, if you put money in the retirement funds since the history of PERS and TERS, they've earned over 9%. Last year they earned 18.8% in the last fiscal year. Today they probably lost some money. But you have an indirect offset, and it's a matter of balancing through the entire spending plan debt, savings, and general fund appropriations. And I think this actually does a very good job of that.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that.
Representative Johnson, and then Representative Roses.
I certainly appreciate that, and I do understand that. Part of the concern I have is that this should be in the capital budget. It should be a capital item. It should be up front for people. People should see that even if you divide it out over the number of years and amortize it, to where it's however much you spend in each year, this should be in the capital budget. To stand up and say that the capital budget is cut when you're adding $250 million to it, to me, is disingenuous and a little inaccurate. So I think the capital, when we look at this, we shouldn't be and I don't want to use the word deceive, but we should understand that we're adding $100 million to the capital budget. And that's my point. I understand the offset, and if your logic held true, we should put every penny in the bank and offset everything we do by generating that investment and just start a big fund that we run everything off of. So it doesn't hold true all the way across the board. I know you're thinking it's maybe a good idea, and it may be, but this is, I am not supportive of bonding our future away, because like you said, today it would lose money, tomorrow it may be worse, and if you look at the economic indicators, it most likely will be. So we are gambling here on being able to offset this, and gambling with money that we have that we should be paying for, and not gambling on a credit card, I guess is a best way I can put it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could you make it a point to bring that to the attention of the chairs of the Finance Committee?
Every chance I get.
Chair, if I could respond to the gambling comment. Last year, the Department of Revenue was working on the pension obligation bond legislation, which has borrowing at 5.5% or thereabouts. This borrowing would be in the 4.5% range or less, depending on what happens over the next few months. We did Monte Carlo simulations looking at every point since markets have existed, and if you borrowed money at 5.5%, put it in and invested it at the expected rates of return, or what would actually happened over that period of time. And at up to about 6% interest, I have a 99% confidence level that we would not be gambling here. It's not a matter of losing money. It's a matter of you making the responsible choice of actually putting the other money in savings. That's really the question here.
One last follow-up.
I can't let it lie because it's just too open. I'm intrigued by the fact they call it Monte Carlo analysis, first of all. Secondly, if you go to Vegas, you see that slot machines pay off at 99%. And they don't build those chandeliers by people that win at slots. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Representative Rosers.
Thank you, and I appreciate Mr. Burnett for bringing up the obligation bond that we were talking about for the Persian TERS obligation. This really is not that different of a discussion when we thought we were going to have serious revenue shortfalls several years ago, and we gathered 50 Alaskans together in Fairbanks, and they took a look at the way we could leverage the money we had, and that was called the percent of market value. And if there was some value to spending up to 5% of the earnings and leaving the 3 to 3.25% or 4% and not touching the corpus, this is actually doing it the opposite way. We're taking the $100 million that we would have spent, and we're going to invest that at an average, if you look at the 10-year average return just on the ARM board alone from when I sat on there, you're talking 8.25% over a 10-year average. And if you go even further out and look at a 15-year average or more, we exceed that. And so there's only been one period of time in which the 3-year average went below 8%, and it was 5.75%. So it's a risk, but it's certainly a very minimal risk. And I think it's one that's worth taking simply because you're going to be able to leverage some of the debt. But the question I would have would be, if you float this general obligation bond and the interest rates start to go south, what kind of a penalty factor is involved in trying to pay off that bond if you chose to pay it off early?
Mr. Barnett?
Through the chair, Representative Roses, general obligation bonds, depending on the structure of the actual debt sale, the state has a number of opportunities to refund bonds. If we can get a lower interest rate, that we can sell new bonds. You don't need a new vote of the people to refund bonds. So that can always be done. And if the bonds are not callable, so we can't pay, they can't pay them off early, we would borrow the money, put it in an account, and do a defeasement, and it would get the advantage of the lower interest rate.
So if I may follow up, translate it into normal English as opposed to finance language. You probably couldn't pay it off, but you could set money aside and use the earnings from that money then to pay off the debt so that you're not upside down in terms of your earnings as opposed to your expenditures.
Yeah, to the chair, Representative Roses, that's correct. And you don't need additional authorization to refund bonds.
Thank you.
I do have.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line two, on page two, line 17 of the bill, it says that, if I'm reading it, will be appropriated, or actually line 19, but up to $500 million will be appropriated from the general fund of the state.
$500,000.
Why is that not reflected in the fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the reason appropriation is not reflected in a fiscal note is because it is an appropriation, and appropriations are not reflected in fiscal notes. Appropriation bills are appropriation bills. Fiscal notes create our information or appropriation vehicle that goes along with the budget with a bill. And since that's a specific appropriation, it doesn't need to be in the fiscal note.
All right, thank you. You're absolutely correct. Thank you.
Finally, if there's no more discussion, I'd entertain a motion to move the bill. Representative Roses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill number 313, which is 25-GH2043/A, with we don't have any amendments or any attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Is there any objection? Without objection, HB 313 passes, and I want to thank you for excellent presentation.
Thank you.
And is there any other business to come before the committee this morning? Our next scheduled meeting is Thursday, January 24th, and we'll be hearing HB 269, which requires that Alaska flags and United States flags be manufactured in the United States for the state of Alaska or its political subdivision. And the other bill we'll be hearing is HB 284, a permanent fund division allowable absent fellowships. And with that, with no other business, the committee meeting is adjourned at 9:30.